Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine. So after many years of keeping quiet, today's special guest, Madeline Black, decided in September 2014 to share her story on the Forgiveness Project's website, and she completely underestimated what the response would be. Now she is the author of the newly published book, Unbroken, Used, Beaten, But Never Broken, My Story of Survival and Hope. And Madeline is here today. Madeline is also a psychotherapist, and she lives in Glasgow. Today she's here to talk to us about her story, to share it in a way that will help all of us rise above the traumas and the things that may threaten to hold us back in our lives, but don't have to. She's going to give us inspiration today and tell us her story. So let's get started. Good morning, Madeline, or good afternoon.
Hi,
because I know you're
good,
in. Yeah.
Good afternoon for me.
Good afternoon
to
you.
From a very snowy Glasgow.
Okay. So, Madeline, this memoir is about a lot of very difficult situations that happened in your life. So why don't you tell us your story in whatever way you would like to share it?
Sure. My story starts in the late 1970s, and I was gang raped by two American teenagers when I was 13 years old. It's kind of just putting it very in a short way for you there.
Okay. But there was more that happened in your life, right?
There was more, yes. You know, it was really actually when I was writing my book that I obviously knew about the main rape, as I call it, but as I was writing my book, I looked at other events in my life and I realized I had been raped three more times before I was 18. What I would refer to as date rapes, I suppose. Not that I am comparing, because no rape is comparable. It's all, you know, traumatic. But, yeah, so I was raped three more times before I was 18.
Now, when you're a young person and you go through this kind of sexual trauma, does it make you, do you think that it makes you more vulnerable to more of it as you go through life? Or do you
Absolutely.
Think it really has nothing to do with it? It does. Okay. And why do you say
yeah.
that?
Well, I think, for me, I can only speak from my point of view at 13, you know, one of the last things that they did to me, they held the knife against my throat and they said, if I told anyone, then they would kill me. And after some of the things they had done to me, you know, I believed them. So I didn't speak about it for years, but what we don't speak about or deal with, it leaks out of our body in other ways. And I know now, because I am a therapist, but I worked in women's aid groups for many years, I worked in rape crisis groups, that's part of my behavior was directly because of the trauma that I had experience. So I became very promiscuous, which I know is quite a common reaction to being raped. I mean, there's no set way, but there's many ways that we can react. And, you know, if a guy just tried anything on me, I was so terrified they would hurt me that I just let them do whatever they wanted to. So, you know, I was an easy target, I suppose. I was vulnerable. So absolutely did impact on me.
Yes. And is there a part of... is there a part of you that was looking for love, and that these sexual encounters you hope will fill, or this was just really about vulnerability?
I don't think it was about love at all. I was so disconnected from myself because I did whatever I could to numb out. So I can understand it much better now. I couldn't understand it at the time. At the time, I just hated myself after it happened. It took me a long, long time to get back all my memories, but what I was left with was just this overwhelming feeling that I was worthless, that I was contaminated, that I was useless, and I just wanted to die. So I'd attempted suicide, which clearly didn't work, but I ended up having an eating disorder, and there were many, many side effects from this one night. It's, you know, it's not just the one night that it affects us, it's the repercussions from afterwards. And had many fears and many phobias, but I don't think I was ever looking for love in these sexual encounters. I was just so disconnected from myself, and I just couldn't feel. It was just another thing to numb out with.
Wow. That's so tragic, you know, for your innocence to be stolen at such a young age, and how it really does set you up, you know, for so many years of pain. Now, this was not something you were able to share with your parents? Not straight away, no. Okay. How old were you when you finally did share?
Well, I was 16, but I couldn't actually find my voice. I couldn't actually say what had happened to me, so I wrote a note. So I guess that was my kind of my early days of writing. I wrote a note and I left it on my pillow before I went to school one morning. And when I came back, they asked me if this was true, and I said yes. And they spoke to the other girl involved, and she said, no, that's not how it happened. They were nice boys. They wouldn't have done that. So it had taken me 3 years to find my voice, and then I felt not believed, you know, and she kind of really didn't stick up for me at all. So it was not a great time. It just plunged me into the darkness even more, really. And my mum was very, very... Yeah, my mum was very quiet, and it took me many years to understand why she was so silent, and I just also thought incorrectly that she didn't believe me, so that was tough.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like a double whammy. I mean, to finally get your voice to reach out or get part of your voice, hoping to be heard, and then to be, you know, basically told you're lying.
Yeah,
and,
but we know this is an issue. I mean, it's very current now with the Me Too movement, how many women, men or children that have been abused or have experienced sexual violence that aren't believed. We know it's very, very common, and it just adds to the trauma that you're feeling already.
Yes. So what is the guilt about after something like this happens?
Yeah, I've tried to work that out for years because now I know that I have nothing to be ashamed about, but it was the shame that kept me so quiet. I was so scared that if anybody found out that they would feel the same way about me. And I think because it is a crime, but it's a very intimate crime against our body and at such a young age as well, that it just causes so much shame that we take it on ourselves because it's not just, you know, an attack of our body, it's our mind and it's our psyche, if that makes sense.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But so what are some of the thoughts that, you know, you had that you're just damaged goods and nobody will ever want you? And
all of that. I was really contaminated. And one of my big phobias was trying to get my body clean, so I would scrub my body for ages in the bath using like bleach products, using scouring pads to really clean myself, but I could never get rid of the smell that I thought I could smell, which was a smell of me and a smell of them. just useless, worthless, and really no self-esteem, no self-confidence at all.
That's just awful,
yeah.
Especially for a child to have to go through that. But it I'm sure it builds on itself as the years go by, and it just creates more and more issues in your life, right?
It does, yes, until hopefully we can make a change or something comes in to alter our way of thinking. And I was very lucky at 17 because my behavior was quite trying for my parents. I suppose that's one way we could look at it. I was a bit of a rebel, so I would, as I said, I would do anything I could to numb out. I was doing a lot of drugs, I was doing a lot of drinking, just to forget what had happened. But my parents just suggested it'd be a good idea to go away, so I went to Israel for a year, and there I met my Scottish husband, all the way over in Israel. And, you know, I couldn't understand why he wanted to be with me. I would drive the poor man mad and say, but what is it about me? Why do you want to be with me? And he just said, I just love you, just for you, for who you are. And over time, his love really made me see that I was lovable and that I could then love in return. And that was a huge turning point for me.
How fortunate. You know, it's amazing how life takes us to places, you know, that we would never imagine are going to be the turning point for us.
Yeah,
now,
I do think he was an angel really sent to save me.
Yes, and I have one. My husband is sort of one as well. Came into my life at a very, very raw time. So, I have an angel too. It's wonderful.
Good.
How lucky are we?
We are.
So the other situations that happened, what kind of time and place were you in when these other rapes or date rapes or whatever you want to call them happened?
They were all while I was still kind of acting out, as I call it, all the effects of what was going on, and it was all at the time of numbing out and rebelling. And, you know, inside, I guess I was screaming what had happened to me, but I just couldn't get the words out. It was at the time when my mum saw my behavior was so bad and kept saying, well, don't you know what could happen to you? And I'm thinking, it's like, but it's already happened. So I just didn't really care about my body. You know, I had no self-belief in my body, or just no self-respect, I suppose, is the word. And I know it's very normal to become promiscuous, and I just thought, well, the worst has already been done. I've already been used, so just let them do what they want, get it over and done with.
Right.
That was my attitude towards myself then.
You know, it's almost, because I work with narcissistic abuse, and I am the child of narcissistic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, when you have a parent like that, you are objectified. You are not seen as an individual. You are just objectified.
Yeah.
You're used for their purpose. And that takes away your self-esteem, the essence of who you are, self-love, all those kind of things, because you, when you're treated as an object, you believe you are nothing
absolutely
more than an object.
And they totally dehumanized me and took great delight in dehumanizing me and ridiculing me and doing all the things that they did. And, you know, they really enjoyed it. And, yeah, so I was left with exactly the feelings that you're describing.
Yes. Wow. Kids can be so cruel. You know, you wonder if they grew up and realized what they did and, you know, if they had any enlightened moments and, you know, wish that they hadn't done that. But it really doesn't matter, because how did you come to forgiveness?
Well, to be honest, I never intended to forgive them. You know, I was so full of rage and hate and revenge, and that's how I was going to live out my days. But it was when my eldest daughter, Anna, became 13, and all of a sudden, my memory started to return from that night, the same age that I was. And I was also studying psychotherapy, and I was going to a lot of self-awareness kind of courses. I was seeing a teacher. And all these memories started to come back to me at night, and they were horrific. And I just thought, well, if they were so bad, surely I would remember them. But now I understand it's because they were so bad, I didn't remember them. And I had to really decide to go for therapy once and for all, and just to really face everything that was done to me. Wasn't an easy thing to do. I was terrified every time I went to the sessions, but I just thought, I've got to stop this. This has been going on for years. And it was near to the end of 3 years that my therapist suggested to me that, you know, maybe they weren't born rapists. And at first, I just was outraged. I thought, how dare he say that to me? I was so angry with him. But, you know, he planted a little seed in my mind, and that seed really just started to grow. And like we just said before, I really wanted to understand what had happened to them, because I don't believe that we come into this world a rapist or a murderer or an arsonist. You know, I do believe we are all born the same, just a blank sheet. I've never met an evil baby so far. And I wanted to understand, what had they seen or experienced or heard to make them behave that way on that night? And once I really took that in, I started to feel compassion towards them. And I thought, you know, I have made a plan, which I called my best revenge, to live my life as well as I possibly could, which I think I have done. But they have got to live with what they did to me, and I can't imagine that will be easy. And so I saw that forgiveness, actually, it wasn't about them, it was about me. I had to really learn to forgive myself just for being a naive 13-year-old that went out and got drunk. That's all I did. And I saw that forgiveness was a choice. You know, for me, by not forgiving, I was holding on to all that anger. And once I decided to forgive, I could just let it go. And life is so much more peaceful from this place than the other place that I used to be in.
Wow, that's amazing. What an amazing perspective. And I could imagine that, you know, having somebody say that to you when you're hurting and you're angry would be just really shocking. But he's absolutely right. It's amazing
so
how that seed grew in your brain, how you just,
absolutely.
You know, in your mind, how you just, that just bloomed and flowered and really, really helped you. So amazing. That was
yeah,
very brave on
really
the part
made,
of the therapist.
Yeah. It was, yes, but it really made me see that at the end of the day, you know, this has been a process that's happened over many years. It's not overnight, but at the end of the day, it's not really what happens to us that is important. It's what we do with what happens to us. And I had a choice. Am I going to be bitter and angry all my days, or can I let it go and live my life? And that was my best revenge, to live a really good life.
Yes, that is the best revenge. So, with a trauma or several traumas like you endured, and you clearly had PTSD because you say it in your notes, was that something that resolved itself?
Yeah, I would say now I don't have any fears, I don't have any phobias, but I think I am maybe a little bit unusual, because once I still saw that I had fears, I would directly face them head on, which is not really for the faint-hearted, really. But I was so determined to clean up and to really find a place where I was okay. My main phobias and fears were being out of control and being around men. So I would put myself into situations where I was out of control as much as possible and being around men. And then I realized that my fears, that they weren't really real. They were all based on what had happened to me, and then they were all based on what could happen to me. So my fears were my imagination. And once I really took that on board, I just thought, actually, right now, I'm really okay. In this very moment, nothing is happening to me. And that really helped to face my fears.
You know, and I really agree. I think that PTSD and complex PTSD can be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one direct route to it, but I do think that a combination of healings from different perspectives can really get you to a place where you can resolve that. So what do you tell your children? You have a daughter. How many children do you have?
I have three daughters.
You have three daughters.
So what
do you tell your daughters about life and what you've been through?
Well, I was always very straight with them. When they got to the age similar to me, I always had told them what had happened to me, and I was always very paranoid that the same thing could happen to them, and that was part of my facing my fears. I thought I didn't want, you know, it was a real struggle for me to have children. When I first met my husband, I just said, I'm never going to have kids, and he was fine. And then every now and again, he'd ask me the question, and I remember the exact moment, which I think is a turning point for my healing. We were away in Thailand on a beach, and he asked me, how about starting a family? And I was all ready to say no. And in that moment, I thought, if I never have kids, then they would have taken away a huge chunk of my life, and I didn't want them to have that power over me anymore. So I went out of my way to then start therapy and to get to a place where I was obviously able to have children, which I now have had three, so I've got past that issue. But I always told them from straight on, listen, I don't care what you've been doing, if you're out, if you're drunk, if you're doing drugs, you're not happy, just call us and we will always come and pick you up and get you. We won't judge whatever's going on. I just want you to be safe, really. So they've always known what's happened to me.
Yes, and you know, I really kind of did the same thing with my children. My mm-hmm. belief in raising children is that you want to do everything to keep them talking to you, to keep mm-hmm. the lines of communication open, to not react and not be judgmental, even when you feel it inside, because you yeah. don't want your kids to ever clam up. You want them to be
absolutely.
Able to tell you absolutely everything, and that's the way that you keep children safe. I am totally, totally in agreement with that.
Yeah, I don't think, we protect them if we wrap them up in cotton wool. I think they need to know the facts. They need to know what can take place on our planet every day somewhere to a woman or a man or a child. So I agree with you.
Right. I mean, I've had some clients who feel like they don't want to share because they're embarrassed about things that they've, choices that they've made or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's even, I think it's more important to be vulnerable with your children, to you know, to let them know that you're not perfect and what you went through, and it brings that relationship closer, don't you think?
Absolutely. No, I think for them to see that I've been in a really bad place, but now I've come out of it and I'm okay, also shows them that, you know, it gives them a bit of hope that if they ever get in a bad place, that, you know, they'll have the strength to come through it as well.
Yes, yes. So was it, do you think what happened to you is what drove you to want to be a psychotherapist?
You know, I was always very interested in the way that people reacted to situations. Before this had happened to me, my father was a Holocaust survivor, and if you met him, you would have had no idea. He was the biggest kid about. He was always mucked about. It looks like he didn't take life seriously, but now I see that his laughter was his strategy. That's what really helped him. It was his tool. And then he had a sister who survived, who was chronic agoraphobic, paranoid, schizophrenic because of her experiences in the Holocaust. And I was just amazed that two people could go through something and come out so differently. And that always intrigued me. What is it that some people can bring to a situation that they flourish and some people bring to a situation that, you know, just cripples them? And I was just fascinated by our attitude in a situation and the difference that can make.
That is really fascinating. And, oh, my gosh, your father, what an example. He is.
Yeah,
is so
I mean,
I do
wonder if I was born to different parents, if I would have survived the way that I've survived, because my mum also had her own traumas. She had a lot of back and neck injuries and had her neck broken whilst she was under the anaesthetic in an operation, so she was bedridden for a couple of years, but she fought her way back to health. She had five kids and saw that life was going past, and she decided to heal herself, and she also came back from a really tough place. And I just think, yeah, I was born to a pair of survivors, and which has made all the difference.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, hopefully you've paved the way for your children and all that stuff doesn't have to happen for them to be strong and be survivors.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I found with my children. For me, it was always I had to learn it the hard way. Everything was hard, 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 hard. That's how mm-hmm. I grew and changed and, became strong. My children are just strong, you know,
Good.
And they haven't had those things. And it's that I admire that all the time. It's sort of a mutual admiration society. They always tell me how they can't believe how I've come through it, and I tell them I can't believe how wonderful they are, you know, just being that way in the world. My gosh, what a gift to be able to be strong and healthy and have boundary systems and not have baggage. And, wow, I think it's just such a gift to be able to give children.
Absolutely.
So, do you work with sexual abuse victims in
your
practice?
You know, I don't specifically work with people that are survivors, but somehow, I learned this in my training, we attract the clients that we need, or our clients are a gift, and most of my clients have been raped, or there's been sexual abuse, and I don't know whether that's because it's so common that most people have, or that it's just because what I energetically attract into my work.
Mm.
But yeah, so at the moment I have maybe 80% of my clients have experienced sexual violence.
Wow. So is there a statistic or something close to a statistic that tells us how many girls are actually vulnerable to this or how many? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. It might be very different in the States, but in the UK, I think it's something like 1 in 3 or 4 women or young girl will experience rape or sexual assault in her life. But that's what's reported. And as we know, with the Me Too movement, so many women, children, I've never reported any of the incidents that I've experienced. So who knows what the statistics are? I don't know any women, any girlfriends that haven't been spoken to inappropriately, been flashed at, been groped, let alone raped or, you know, sexual abuse. There's a whole variety of harassments that are totally inappropriate. And luckily, it's all coming out now. Well, that's just how it was, is what the older generation would say to me. You just put up with it if your boss grabbed your bottom or whatever at work. That was just the normal. And I think, well, no, it's not really. It shouldn't be that way. So I'm hopeful that change is coming.
I hope so, too. I remember being a teenager and, you know, working in an office and having been sexually assaulted and everything like that. But there were no laws about, you know, sexual harassment back in the 80s. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think maybe it started in the 90s. But, you know, when things happened years ago, nobody wanted to hear about it. Nobody believed it. So that movement has been going on for quite a while. But, yes, now it's really, really acute. Now it's really in the public eye. And so hopefully
that's... Which is great.
Yes, hopefully it's risen up so that it can be really looked at and corrected. So your message is that let's hear your message. What is your message about all of this?
Well, I guess there's many messages. I mean, I go into schools, and I guess it's a little bit like a cautionary tale, you know. I speak with other survivors, so also then to offer them hope that whatever happens, we can really get past anything that happens to us. But I also speak to encourage people to find their voice. You know, one of the most powerful thing that I've ever done has been to find my voice. It's as if I'm just standing in my true self. Everything else has fallen away, and this is who I am now. And it really helped to dispel any shame, any guilt that I felt. The more I confronted the shame, then it just diluted. And then I realized there's nothing to be ashamed about at all. The shame was never mine. The shame always belongs to the perpetrators. I guess my message is also to people, whoever have experienced any form of sexual violence, that it's never, ever too late to go and get help. There's always someone there available to listen. Or if you can't find a therapist, just find someone that you know and trust. And just to be able to tell your story in its entirety and to be listened to and to really be believed and heard, there's nothing more powerful than that.
Yes, we cannot heal from these things without validation and support.
Yeah.
That is crucial. That's the that's the baseline that in which we can grow from. So who was your greatest support system? Was it your husband or...
Yeah, well, he's always been a constant. We call him a constant support. You know, it's now 35 years nearly that we've been together, so it's a long time. So he's been through many different phases with me. But, you know, I'm very lucky. I've had access to very many different therapies, and I think it's just been the combination of them all and my determination as well I just refused to be identified after a while by what had happened to me. So that's always driven me. But, yeah, you just have to find what works for you. And for me, giving it oxygen, you know, writing about it and speaking about it has really helped. But I don't imagine that everybody could be a public speaker or to write it, but even just to write it down for ourselves, or even just to speak it to ourselves, you know, to tell us our own story, because ultimately what was really the worst thing, the silence just hurt me and it protected the perpetrators. So to break that silence is not just empowering for me, but it gives other people the chance to find their voice, because it was the courage really of somebody else that allowed me to find my courage and to learn to speak out. And I know that when I speak out now, every time I speak, wherever I'm speaking, somebody will always approach me and share their story with me. Or they say, you know, you could have been saying my story. So, so many similarities, and thank you. Now I feel I can share my story. And so, you know, we are stronger together. We do heal together as well.
That's so true. And, you know, by doing the show, and I get to talk to so many people, and I learn so much and so many different approaches and everything, but I'm also able to share, you know, my perspective and what I've been through. And it does. It really does help people. So here's a emotionally or a charged, let's say, a very charged question. Would you go through it again to become the person you are today?
Well, that is an interesting question, and I would not wish it on anybody what had happened to me, but now I wouldn't change it either.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it's made me who I am, but then it, paradoxically, it's not who I am as well. You know, I am so much more than the events in my life, but this, you know, I wonder if this hadn't happened to me, would I just be asleep? Would I just be a little, you know, middle-aged housewife from North London getting on with her life on autopilot? But this has really shown me that life is very precious. You know, I was very nearly killed, that one of them was very capable of killing me, and it was really the kindness, the heart of the other one who stopped him. And the other one had also done some pretty gruesome things to me, so I have gratitude towards him for stopping his friend from killing me. And it made me realize that life is best lived. Life can be taken away. And I was very fortunate, because so many women are raped and killed. And I was lucky that they didn't kill me. They didn't decide to kill me in the end. And it just makes me very grateful to be alive. And I really appreciate every moment that I have.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. You know, people... There are the people who say to themselves, why me, why me, why me? God hates me. The universe hates me.
Oh, I've done all that as well.
Yes.
I have done that for many years.
Yes. But you see that when you are in that mindset, it doesn't. All it does is make things worse, and you are the one that suffers from it. Yeah. But I do
believe.
But then
I started to ask, well, why not me? You know, no one ever said that life was going to be easy. Why not me? We know it happens so much.
Yes, it does. You know, I think we might have a caller. Sometimes people call in, or they might.
Great.
Let's see.
Sure.
Hi. Are you connected? Do you hear us?
Hi. Yes,
hi.
I am.
Hi. Did
thanks.
You
yeah,
did you want to participate in
call.
The conversation?
I did. I know the topic wasn't primarily due to me, but you know, I have to agree, you know, telling your story and not becoming a silent victim, you know, sharing your story with other people really helps. And you know, it takes that special person who's gone through, I don't know if you call it the fire, but you know, who's been through the same thing and who can turn back and help other people. That's the same person who helped me through the situation. And so I commend you, you know, for speaking out, because, you know, for years I was the same silent victim. And then I know when I shared my story with other people, that's when I began healing. And so then other people would come to me and say, hey, do you remember when you told me this or told me that? Can you help me with, you know what I mean? And so that's when I began, like, wow, you know. And so I kind of look at it like, maybe it's not the right way to say it, but you know that Olympic where, you know, one person passes the baton to somebody else and they pass it to somebody else. Not one person has all the answers, but collectively we can all help each other. And so, you know, we all go through bad things, but we don't have to be a professional victim our whole lives. And we can break through these things and heal with the help of each other.
Yes.
I'm smiling down the end of the phone here. I'm just agreeing with everything that you're saying. It's so good to hear. The founder of the Forgiveness Project that I am a story with, she doesn't call us storytellers. She calls us story healers, which I think is just a perfect example of what you've just said. In the sharing of your story, it's helped you and it's helped others too. There's so much healing in sharing our stories. And to break the silence
is
so important.
Know,
and I thank you.
It is. It is, because, you know, you don't have to suffer in silence. And, you know, and that's why I'm saying it just takes that one person, if you'll just reach out, you know, anybody, just reach out for help. Because it may come in the least place that you expect it, you know.
It often does, really, doesn't
it?
And
so I just wanted to talk real quick. I love listening to the show, and thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you. Okay, keep listening. I'm going to put you back on hold. Thank you for sharing. So that's going back on hold. Okay, so that was wonderful. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
and
what
you
he
know,
says
have...
is really just echoes how I feel, that it just is so empowering for ourselves to shatter that silence and to bust the shame, really, because in the silence breaking, we do crack the shame as well. But it's now I just feel it's what it can do for other people when I share my story. It's not really about me anymore.
Yes, and you know, and I'm sure that, well, I shouldn't say I'm sure. I know that for me, when I'm helping people overcome their narcissistic abuse issues, they often want to hear what my experience was. What did I experience? How did I feel about it? What did I do about it? You know, it really helps people to be able to compare themselves, and they feel they trust me because they know I've been in their shoes. I understand.
Yep, and you've come out of it as well. Which is really, hopeful for them as well.
Very much so. And yes, and so passing the baton or paying it forward or whatever, you know, and I often tell people, you know, you're going to get better and you're going to want to do what I do because you're going to feel so good about it. You're going to want to share and help others. And, so what you're doing is so important, Madeline. So,
thank you.
Yeah, so what else? Was there anything else you wanted to talk
about?
Well,
when I first shared my story, actually, it was interesting because not many of my friends really knew what had happened to me, or if they knew, they didn't know that it was near fatal. So when I shared my story, they were like, is this you? Did it happen to you? But you're so happy and cheerful, and I'd never have guessed it had happened to you. And I think that's one of the reasons why I share my story, because people assume, I think, wrongly, that we could never get past a huge trauma like this, that we'd always be traumatized. But, you know, I saw my dad, a Holocaust survivor who had all his family murdered, loving life and enjoying life. And it wasn't so much by what he said, but how he lived his life. I thought, you know, if he can get past all of that, then surely I can get past one night in my life.
So
I think people underestimate our own strengths. I think we're always so much stronger than we really think we are.
Did your father ever talk about how he emotionally and psychologically survived that?
He didn't talk an awful lot about it. It was actually only when his daughters started to get husbands, partners, that he slowly started to speak to his son-in-laws, but he wasn't in a place where he could speak much, and I just saw that his humor was his way of coping.
Okay.
Towards the end of his life, we got bits of it, but no, not bits. There's a lot of gaps. We don't know all the parts.
Okay, and maybe that's better, because there's nothing good to be had
from
that.
There. That's, he had to shut that part off. We just couldn't go there. It was too painful.
I mean, that is the worst that anybody could ever experience.
Yep.
So for anyone who's just tuned in, we're talking with Madeline Black about her book Unbroken and about her story of survival and hope after being gang raped at 13 and then having a few other times happen before the age of 18. And so we're talking about, you know, how strong we can actually be and how we can heal. And, you know, so many people say to me, you know, like I was talking about the victimization thing. Why me? And like you said, why not me? But I know for me, it has propelled me into really a life that I never would have known. Meeting it just every aspect of life is better. So that was a part of my growth. I just had to go through it. And yes, I wouldn't want to relive it, but I wouldn't change a thing.
Yep, I feel the same way.
Yes.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is interesting. You know, and we are given these challenges not to sit down and have them knock us over, but to strengthen us, to pick us up, to show us who we really are and who we really can be. That's
Absolutely.
What the challenges are about. And
yeah,
that's
I really,
what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, but I think we're not defined, you know, by what knocks us down. We're defined by how we get back up.
You're absolutely right. So I always, you know, in my mind, I use, like, hurdles, like, you know, someone who's running track or whatever. But in what I found in my life is that whenever there's a hurdle, whenever I feel like there's something in my way, you know, that's just stressing me out or giving me a hard time or I can't figure out, I know that is one of the things I'm here to jump.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at those things as a challenge, as you do. I say, oh, that's uncomfortable. Okay, I'm going to jump right over that thing because that's a step of growth for me. And I think that it's a good way to look at life, to be able to take on challenges with the, not the survivor, but the just as a winner, a survivor, a winner. Yes, I can do this. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And each time
but it's
you
also,
do it, you
have a very inquiring mind. And I think, you know, I've heard this quote before, and I think it fits in very well, that a comfort zone is a beautiful place, but nothing ever grows there. And if we stay within our comfort zone all the time, we're never going to expand. We're never going to grow as human beings and, you know, get larger within ourselves. So, yeah, we have to. Well, I think I will always have to challenge myself and do the things that I find difficult. And then we realize they weren't so difficult after all.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, what a great way to end the show. I do have to say goodbye. But, Madeline, so your book Unbroken is available where? Where can people buy it?
Oh, you can now get it in America. You can buy it in bookstores and you can buy it on Amazon. Yeah, wherever.
Okay.
You can find
and
out more information.
And if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Sure. I'm on Twitter, which is MadBlack65, or I have a Facebook page, or you can go to my website, madelaneblack.co.uk. You can get some more information there or listen to some of my talks or see some of my interviews.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing my story. I'm sure that everybody benefited greatly by hearing you. So have a lovely afternoon and evening.
Thank you.
Keep warm. And,
you're going to face the
snow now. Yes, thanks again for all that you do to help everyone.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.